When Caden Salter enrolled at Tennessee in January, the thought was that the freshman quarterback would help Tennessee's competition at that position and perhaps contend for the starting job. But the Salter era at Tennessee reportedly is finished before it ever really got off the ground. VolQuest reported Tuesday morning, citing sources, that Salter has been dismissed from Tennessee's team following a second off-the-field incident in his initial preseason with the Vols. Welcome to the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer alongside John Adams of the Knoxville News Sentinel. John, pretty big development here a couple months before Tennessee's season opener. The news that four-star quarterback early enrollee is gone. He won't be contending for the quarterback competition at Tennessee, and he'll be rebooting his career elsewhere. What do you make of this? You like this move by Josh Heupel, or too heavy-handed here?
I don't think it's too heavy-handed, Blake. Josh Heupel is just starting his program, and he's got to institute his values. And this is a time where you maybe need to be a little heavy-handed with discipline, because if you're lax at the outset, that sets a tone. And that's been a problem with some coaches in the past at Tennessee. So I applaud the move by Heupel. I'd already got a couple of emails from fans saying they need to cut Salter loose. I think also what factors into this is he's a quarterback. He's a team leader just by the designation of his position. He's out getting in trouble, and it's happened twice in a short amount of time. So I think Josh Heupel made the right move. And it makes me wonder, Blake, and I don't remember what other schools were recruiting him heavily, how heavily the Texas schools were recruiting him. I just wonder if some schools might have thought there could be a problem with him.
I believe Baylor and Auburn were the other schools among Salter's shortlist. So just to rehash these incidents here, Salter was initially suspended prior to Tennessee's spring practice. He didn't practice at all in the spring. He was suspended throughout the spring after he was involved at an incident at Stokely Hall. Now, we don't know exactly what Salter's involvement was in that incident, because at the time he was a minor. Several of Salter's teammates were arrested in connection with that incident, but Salter being a minor, the details of his involvement were not public, other than Josh Heupel said he was among the players suspended in connection with that incident. Now, that incident was initially investigated as a burglary at Stokely Hall, but Salter's teammates were then arrested on drug charges in connection from that incident. There was also a minor who was arrested on juvenile charges in connection with that incident. And now Tennessee did not confirm whether that was Salter or not, other than just say Salter was suspended in connection with that incident. So that was the initial situation. Salter was then reinstated from suspension on June 1st. So full steam ahead. He's back for summer workouts, you know, with preseason camp, coming around the corner. Here on Saturday morning, Salter was arrested, and now he is 18. He was arrested by university police on misdemeanor drug charges for simple possession after marijuana was allegedly found in the vehicle that Salter was driving during a traffic stop at 3 a.m. on Saturday morning on Cumberland Avenue. Amari McNeil, a teammate, was also arrested on misdemeanor drug charges stemming from that traffic stop. According to police, Salter was driving the vehicle, and he told police that he had 4 grams of marijuana, which is a small amount of marijuana, and he told the passenger to throw it out of the vehicle when officers stopped the vehicle, according to police reports. So those are the two incidents. You know, neither one, I think, would typically rise to the level of a player dismissal, but the fact that you had two in a short period of time, and I think I go back to what you say. Salter's a quarterback, and whether they should be held to different standards or not, I guess, is up for debate. But the fact is, I think pretty much every coach in America has high-level expectations for how their quarterback should carry themselves. And Josh Heupel, I think in particular, as someone who played the position at a very high level at the University of Oklahoma, knows better than most what is expected out of a college quarterback. And I think we can interpret from this that he doesn't like what he's seeing from a quarterback that he inherited from Jeremy Pruitt. And I think that's something here too. This is not someone that Heupel got to know during the recruiting process. This is a signee that he inherited and was already here when he got here. So I think, you know, that might factor into this too.
Blake, earlier this year, I did a column with Archie Manning talking about his the Manning Passing Academy that's been going on for 25 years now. He and Peyton and Eli all take part in that. And he was talking about the values he treasures most in a quarterback. Strong arm was way down the line. Some of the more valued attributes, one of the more valued attributes, Archie pointed out, was decision-making. And I think in Josh Heupel's offense, and having watched them at his teams at UCF, his quarterbacks have to be able to make decisions very quickly. And this guy just, he's making bad decisions off the field. What makes you think he would make really good decisions on the field? It also shows how it makes you wonder about how seriously he takes his position and his future as a football player. Again, if it had just been one incident, you write it off, maybe, okay, freshman mistake. But now two incidents, it's not just one mistake, it's a trend, and I think it gives us insight to the kind of the person he might be. And Josh Heupel just doesn't need that. He's already got a commitment in this class in the 2022 class from a four-star quarterback. We talked about that. I mean, that's an accomplishment given Tennessee's lowly status right now, and also the possibility that it could go on NCAA probation. So he's got a four-star guy there. He's got experienced players at the position. So this is not a terrible loss for Tennessee. We don't even know how good this guy would have been.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, Tennessee is prepared to withstand this loss. And, you know, I'm not going to speculate on how much that influenced Heupel's decision. I do think sometimes just in general, whether a coach dismisses a player or sticks it out with a player, sometimes depends on how well-stocked they are at the depth chart at that position. Now, I don't know whether that played into Heupel's decision here, but point being, Tennessee is pretty reasonably stocked, at least depth-wise, at quarterback. You know, you look at the returners, you have Harrison Bailey and Brian Maurer, both have starting experience. I think Bailey's probably exiting the spring, maybe a little bit ahead of Maurer, at least in terms of what we saw in the spring game. Bailey had a really, really strong spring game. I know there's only one sample size. But then you have the two veteran transfers, Hinnon Hooker, the Virginia Tech graduate transfer, who I think was pretty much the front runner for the job throughout the spring, and probably still is the front runner for the job. And then you have Joe Milton, transfer from Michigan, who also has immediate eligibility. So you got four guys in this competition. All four guys have starting experience. You don't have a surefire starter in the bunch. I don't know that there's a star in the bunch. I don't even know if there's a really, really good quarterback, a really good quarterback in the bunch, but you have options. And so I think Tennessee is prepared to withstand this, whether they go in the direction of a veteran like Hinnon Hooker or Joe Milton, or maybe someone younger like a Harrison Bailey. They are well stocked there. And you look at this first offseason, or preseason, I really call it, for Josh Heupel, John, and he stepped into as bad a challenging a situation as you can find in college football. Maybe not the most challenging I can think of in recent memory, but you'd have to point to a couple of extreme examples to find a more challenging, I think, preseason that he stepped into, with an ongoing NCAA investigation, a late coaching change. He comes in late January. And since he arrived, I think he's done a nice job of the transfer portal. He's added a lot of players. We mentioned Joe Milton. But some of the guys that were left from Jeremy Pruitt's last signing class are now gone. A lot of the top signees from that class are now gone. You think back to that class. The highest rated signee in that class was defensive lineman Dylan Brooks. He asked out of his letter of intent. Four-star running back Cody Brown asked out of his letter of intent. Four-star signee Catron Evans, defensive lineman, he's out of his letter of intent. And now Caden Salter, four-star quarterback, a linchpin member of that signing class, he's off the team. So really, the final signing class that was left to Josh Heupel, some of the top talent, at least in terms of the recruiting rankings, is gone. And with the way the recruiting is going in this class, it just makes you wonder, John, is this could be 2 years in a row now where Tennessee's not getting much out of its signing classes.
Blake, I think it's still too early to judge this signing class. I think Heupel and his staff will gain momentum as the years goes along. Now, whether that can translate into a top 20 class, which you pretty much routinely expect from Tennessee, I don't know about that. But as we've discussed before, transfers are such a factor now in evaluating your overall, the talent of your roster. So maybe it's not as crucial as in the past, but it's still, I think it still matters a great deal. And I think it's something that probably concerns fans at this point because they're so accustomed to Tennessee recruiting well, no matter what. And it's not doing that right now. And even though it's early, Tennessee fans follow those recruiting rankings, as so many SEC fans do. And they probably are concerned about that. We'll see how it works out.
We're going to interrupt this bad news, John, for some good news. You can subscribe to this podcast for free if you don't already. We hope you do. If not, subscribe on it's the Volunteer State, wherever you get your podcasts. If you like our podcasts, give us a good rating. That helps get us in front of more listeners, which we would enjoy. We want to grow our audience, even as Tennessee thins its roster.
Do you think Caden Salter was one of our subscribers?
I don't think so.
Could we lose a subscriber there?
We might have lost a subscriber, but we'll march on nonetheless. John, you mentioned the recruiting rankings. I think that you make a good point in that a couple things. One, it's still early. And I know the only people that ever say it's still early usually in the recruiting world are it comes from programs that aren't recruiting particularly well at that juncture. Although I think we maybe advise some caution when Tennessee had such a lofty recruiting ranking at this time last year and it did tumble a little bit. Point, you know, sometimes those June recruiting rankings aren't the end-all be-all. I think you make a good point there. I think you made another one in terms of in this new landscape of college football with the one-time transfer exception, that factors in so much that recruiting rankings only tell part of the story. They still tell a big part of the story, but it's only a piece because there's now an additional way to provide immediate impact to your roster in the form of transfers who compete immediately. But I do think with the recruiting front, John, to see Tennessee where they're at here, with just a handful of commitments in this 2022 class, they do have the four-star quarterback, Taven Jackson, committed. That's a good sign. But otherwise, it's a handful of three-star prospects. Tennessee's really lagging in the national rankings. They're really lagging in the SEC. I think the best thing that could happen for Tennessee it's just for the season to get here, and recruits need to see what it is they can expect from a Josh Heupel program. It's one thing to hear about it. You see it in the spring game. But I think, you know, Tennessee just needs the season to get here. Josh Heupel needs recruits to at least give him a chance once the season arrives, maybe even if you already committed. If you like what you see, you can always change your mind. You can still commit to Tennessee because here in the preseason, I think it's such a tough sell, and I think we're seeing that. You got the investigation. You got the, you know, the lingering mess with the previous coaching staff, and you can sell this new era all you want, but I think it's hard for people to really believe in it until they see it on the field. So, for this 2022 recruiting class, I think it's critical that Tennessee starts the season in a strong fashion.
Yeah, Blake, coaches can be terrific salespeople, but no matter how good of a game they talk, it's hard to buy what they're selling until you actually see the product out there. I remember many years ago when Barry Switzer was a coach at Oklahoma and that option offense was rolling. And he got Troy Aikman to sign there, convinced him, I guess, that they were going to go to more of a pro-style passing game. That didn't last long. Troy Aikman transferred to UCLA and the rest is history. And Barry Switzer won another national title with that with Jamel Holloway, an option guy quarterback. So he was talking. He was talking a good game about the pro style offense, and you hear this all the time about what a coach is going to do and what will look like. But once players actually see it, now you could get a recruit could go back and say, I guess get video of Central Florida and see what UCF was doing under Heupel. But I don't think they're going to. I don't think their research will go to that extent. So they'll wait to see what Tennessee is going to do. And we've heard so much about the fast-paced offense, and we've talked about how it is it's a quarterback-friendly offense and a receiver-friendly offense. And if it's friendly to those guys, it's probably friendly to the running backs too. So if Tennessee can move the ball and have success in the first year, I think that will bode well for the 2023 recruiting class. But right now, you just gotta talk the best game you can.
Who do you think was the biggest loss this offseason, John? When you think about now Caden Salter joins the list, that also includes, let's throw in the transfers, Henry Toa and Eric Gray, and let's add in those signees. And there was a bunch of other transfers as well, obviously, but I think without going through the exhaustive list, I think Henry Toa and Eric Gray headlined that list of transfers. And then let's add in the other signees who were released from their letters of intent, Dylan Brooks, Cody Brown, and Katron Evans. Do you think one of those was clearly the most stinging loss for Tennessee? Is it Salter, or do you think it's somebody else from that bunch?
Well, in terms of if you include the transfers, I think it's Eric Gray. Eric Gray will probably be one of Oklahoma's top two running backs, which means he might gain 1,000 yards. I think he had the potential to gain 1,000 yards for Tennessee. He gave Tennessee a proven running back, a guy who could make the big play. I think he would have fit well in Heupel's offense. So to me, that's the biggest loss. Toa hurts because of the position. Tennessee doesn't have much depth there. I just didn't think Toa had a great year this past season, and perhaps that spoke in part to Tennessee's defensive front. Maybe couldn't fend off the offensive lineman, give Toa the freedom to make more plays. But I think we made that the subject of one of our podcasts earlier, and I really question whether Toa will even start at Alabama. Alabama is really strong at linebacker. So, but from a Tennessee perspective, I think it hurts. A lot of those losses hurt. Wanya Morris probably hadn't played up to expectations at offensive tackle for a five-star, but he still was good enough to start for Tennessee as a freshman, and maybe he would have fared well in Heupel's system. So that was a loss. And DeAndre Johnson, I think, was a significant loss. And Key Lawrence, mm-hmm. We don't know exactly what he could do. He had a highly recruited cornerback, but he's competing for a starting job at Oklahoma. So after transferring, so I just think there were so many losses there. And that's why I look at this at Heupel's position. There may have been coaches starting out from a worse position than he is, but from a Tennessee perspective, I don't think so. Not since I've been here in 1987 as a head coach, assume the position as at Tennessee with his so little to work with and with his depth so depleted by transfers, perhaps lackluster recruiting there at the end by Jeremy Pruitt. So, yeah, it's really a challenge. But Eric Gray, to me, is the biggest loss. I mean, he could be a all-conference running back in the Big 12.
The question I probably get most frequently, John, and you, I'm sure you hear it quite a bit as well, is about the ongoing investigation and particularly about the penalties that may come from that. I think it's pretty fair to say we've been saying all along you shouldn't expect the NCAA to rule on this before this season. You can just look at history. The NCAA I can't think of an example where the NCAA has reached a decision in like, you know, 6, 7, 8 months time, which would be what we're talking about here. It's not going to happen, I don't think, for Tennessee before this season. So the other option is for Tennessee to self-impose, if they think that would be a better avenue, to self-impose some penalties. Previously, we've discussed this on the podcast, John. you were in the corner of don't self-impose, try to make a bowl game this year and take your chances come what may down the road from the NCAA. And also, it's worth noting that even if Tennessee self-imposed, that doesn't guarantee that they wouldn't face additional penalties from the NCAA. It just can help lighten the sentence, so to speak. Are you still in that camp? Do you still think Tennessee, after some of these losses that maybe have happened since, some of these departures that maybe have happened since we last discussed that, are you still in that camp that you think that Tennessee should not self-impose a postseason ban this year? Because I think I'm the other direction. I think I would self-impose a one-year postseason ban and try to appeal to the NCAA's sense of mercy and say, hey, we've cooperated with this. We're going to take a postseason ban in year one of this new coaching era. Now, don't pile on when your investigation is finished. But do you still think that Tennessee should not self-impose and go for a bowl game here in year one?
Yes, I do, Blake. And one of the reasons I think Tennessee has a better chance of making a bowl game in year one under Heupel than it will in year two under Heupel. I think Tennessee could have a worse record in 2022 than it does in 2021. And a lot of that's looking at the schedule. 2022, I think, is a much more challenging schedule. So, yeah, I just think Tennessee should go ahead and try to go to a bowl. However, I think the bowl sanction is not as big a deal as it used to be. A lot of players don't even want to play in a bowl anymore. They want to start getting ready for the NFL combine. I don't think that many players now would look at the possibility of, oh, I won't be able to go to a bowl my first year, my second year if I sign with Tennessee. I just don't think that's as paramount as it used to be. The reason from a fan perspective and from a momentum perspective for Tennessee's program, though, I think it would be significant to get to a bowl game this first year under Heupel. And I think with this schedule, it's a possibility. So I remain in that camp. We're following different paths there.
All right. Fair enough. We're allowed to disagree from time to time on the podcast. And I guess maybe more firepower for your point, John, and I don't know why I'm arguing your case instead of my own, is by the time the NCAA gets around to ruling on this thing, that 12-team playoff might be in place to where the bowl games, if you're not in that playoff, they're even further watered down. So, you know, the way the NCAA moves, it could be a couple years before they get around to issuing any sanctions here, at which point the 12-team playoff could be up and running. But let's end on that note, John, because, well, maybe that's just a happier note to talk about than a quarterback getting dismissed from the program. So let's close with that. Your thoughts on the proposed 12-team playoff. I'll go first. You know, initially, I've all along said you don't need playoff expansion, because I think if you're not in those top four teams, I really don't see you winning the national championship anyway. However, I think I've come to change my mind on that, because the four-team playoff got so stale so fast. It was frequently the same teams, and I didn't think it was very interesting for the sport. So even if those other teams, 5 through 12, can't probably win the national championship, I do think it adds some intrigue to the sport overall. And I prefer 12 over 8 because I think it preserves value for the regular season in that the top four seeds would get first round byes. So there's still games maybe won't have the as much meaning as you expand the playoff from 4 to 12, but I think 12 creates more meaning for the regular season than 8 would, because in an 8-team playoff there's no byes. So it's really just comes down to seeding. What do you think about going from 4 to 12, this proposal?
I don't care that much about whether it's 8 or 12 teams. The main thing to me is I believe that the conference champions in the Power 5 groups all should go to if they win their conference, they should go to the playoff. That eliminates this subjective ranking. Well, Big 12 teams didn't play, they got a schedule, the Pac-12's down this year, whatever. If you win your conference championship, you deserve to make the playoff. The SEC champion should go to the college football playoff. That, to me, will help scheduling, because you don't have to line up as many patsies in your non-conference schedule, because even if your record, let's say you lose two non-conference games, but you lose only one in your conference and you win your championship, those two non-conference losses won't impact you. And I think that's important because I'm really concerned about the scheduling and just for the good of college football, too many sure wins and lopsided games. I think this will help. Expanding the playoff is crucial to helping the schedule. So I'm all for that. 8 or 12, it doesn't matter to me.
Just go to a 10-game SEC schedule and like they did last year, we had a 10-game SEC schedule. Go to a 10-game SEC schedule, play two non-conference games, one of which has to be another group of five, and you got at least 11 of 12 regular season games or compelling matchups. ADs talk about all the time, how do we get fans in the stands? And, you know, in this era where everybody's got a 55-inch television in their living rooms, that is certainly a challenge. I won't deny it is more tempting than ever to sit at home and watch the game on TV. But putting compelling opponents on the field is a factor in that as well.
I'd vote for a 12-game SEC schedule.
Just the heck with that non-conference game.
Yes. Huh? I mean, despite all the COVID stuff, to me, and the uncertainty of whether you'd even be able to play a game on a certain Saturday, every game you went to or watched on TV in the SEC was a conference game. And I think that means more in the Southeast than it does anywhere else.
All right, John, we'll leave it there for now. Pick it up next week. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.